When we began this, we were trying to choose titles for different things, and I didn't know what quite to put on my title. What I have put together is primarily a program for young people in the village, and most of the young people are not, but a big portion of them left this morning, and that's primarily the group that I put it together for. So I'm going to be doing this twice this week, this morning and later on sometime, and I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's going to be pretty close to the same presentation. In the past, I've come up here in May to be a program for high school youth in the Lutheran Church in America Pacific Northwest Synod. In the last couple of years, I've been their program for them, and they haven't turned me down yet. And it's been a lot of fun. But primarily, I spoke about particular problems they were having, about their own Christianity, about themselves as people, what was happening in their lives. And what I discovered was the same thing that happens in the life of any person, whether they're a young person of 16 or a young person of 96. A person has this same kind of thing happening. The first presentation I gave originally was called The Richness of Your Faith. And that's on tape back there someplace. And I've ripped out part of that to include today. So what you have is excerpts, I hope it's the best of the excerpts, of seven different presentations that have been made up here at Holden Village. It's not serious theology. I'm incapable of doing serious theology. Matter of fact, I'm rarely serious. And I believe in a great deal of humor, because every once in a while in the midst of humor I can become serious. That's the pace that I live my life with. When I'm really down the dumps, I can't even grin at myself. I sort of grip my teeth on the inside. Also, I'm going to watch my vocabulary. I don't have to so much with the younger people, but something's liable to creep out because my wife married a sailor. And in 19 years, she just about cleaned out my vocabulary, but she's got a few more to work on. So I'll try not to use those. We have two problems as human beings, which we relate ourselves, our faith, our life, or any aspect of it. First off, most of us really don't feel very good about ourselves. We've been put down too often by others. We even put ourselves down. We've been told that having an ego is bad. You should be humble. You should empty yourself so that God can fill you up. I completely disagree with the kind of theology that you find in the books, for instance, like Watchman Nee. That's my favorite whipping post. If you haven't read anything by Watchman Nee, don't. Watchman Nee is a Buddhist Christian, and he's trying to say that you must become a Buddhist first before you can become Christian. You must empty yourself so that God can fill you. Compare that to that other person by the name of Jesus of Nazareth, which he talked about the kind of lives we live. They're comparing those two. He's not telling you to empty your life of everything you are so that I can fill you up. He takes you where you are, loves you where you are, and points you in the direction you should go. You don't have to deny yourself everything you are in order to be filled. One thing you do not want to do is to deny your humanity. Some people are so divine, they're inhuman. Secondly, most of us don't know really very much about the Bible and our faith and our relationship with Jesus. I've been studying the Bible seriously for about 15 years, seriously. And as far as the level of my competence goes, I'm no better off than when I started. Primarily because I've discovered that the Bible is much more wonderful and deep than I'd ever dreamed. It contains more. It's not a great answer book. It raises the significant questions I need to answer for myself and my life. So what I'm going to try to do in the next few minutes is try to relate something that was picked up this morning on love. Of how we can become a loving person and become alive, so that that kind of love that we have within us, no matter what it is, or whence it cometh, or whither it goeth, can be expressed to others. and to ourselves. Because many people are telling us that love is a learned phenomenon. We aren't given it in our gene patterns. Paul Sorokin, the title of his book, The Ways and the Powers of Love, some of these titles I'm going to mention you may not ever want to read. And they're all deadly titles. This is why titles are so bad. The Ways and Powers of Love. You know, right away you'd look at that title and go on to the next book. But in it he says, a loving person is a person who can love themselves. You know, a few years ago we would have been saying, love yourself? That's an ego trip. Don't do that. You're not supposed to love yourself. You're supposed to love others. But we've discovered the hard way that you really can't love others until you love yourself. It's not like looking in the mirror while you're brushing your teeth in the morning. You say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the loveliest one of all? And the mirror says, you are, you lovely old thing, you. It's not this kind of stuff, you know. It's being alive to everything around you and to who you are and the wonder of it all. It's like waking up and you're saying, my God, I'm alive for another day. Not, oh Lord, look, it's raining. It's like this morning, I was hoping it was going to rain last night because we really needed the rain. The forests are getting very dry around here. There's fire danger. We really need a good rain. Maybe it should rain one of these beautiful days all day long. Just drench it. And people walk around and we'll be all huddled over. But the creation we all enjoy needs it. Just look at how this beautiful village would look, burned to the ground. So sometimes the blessings don't appear to be blessings. And that happens in our lives. So there's three things we need to perhaps, ingredients we need to remember about ourselves becoming a loving person. First one is hope. You know, what would you like to do the rest of your life with yourself for other people? You ever thought about that? What would you like to do with the rest of your life? For other people. Secondly, love, you know, the feeling, whatever that is, whether it's bigoted or neurotic, whether it's super cool or really great, but whatever it is, it comes and it goes. It's almost like the story, you know, of Nicodemus and Jesus. And they're talking about being born from on high. Again, you know, there's a change in words. It's always heard. There's only one place in the Bible that says you must be born again. It does not say in the Greek you must be born again. It says you must be born from on high. Just like the question came this morning of having Jesus, you know, you must have a God within you. The word within or among has changed its meaning. So the proper word now is you must have Jesus among us. Third thing is sharing. Whatever we have, we've got to give it away. It's like the, those of you who heard the meditation on manna the other night, manna that's fricasseed and manna that's fried and all sorts of things. If you can't save it, it's going to spoil and rot, and just like love. You can't hoard it away and say, oh boy, I got a quart more love today. You have to give it away. So a loving person is a person who loves themselves and will give that love away to others. The ugly fact is that we don't think or feel that we are much, and we turn upon people, but we turn upon ourselves first. It's we who get the twitches and the nerves. When we hate ourselves first. Thoreau and Walden said, oh God, to have reached the point of death only to find that I've never lived at all. I've never loved anyone nor done anything for anyone else. A great prophet, who's my father, he's going to be 81 his next birthday. And I do hope that I am as fit when I am 81 as he is. He said he discovered that when he quit thinking about himself, you quit thinking about other people. This was in a discussion we'd had when we were talking over dinner time, some of the ideas that had come out in these discussions. When you quit loving yourself, you quit loving other people. And so when you have that whole theological or philosophical framework that I ain't nothing and I ain't worth nothing and I ain't got anything to give, you haven't. Question, how in the world is God going to love us if we can't say, no, God, I'm not worthy, or no, God, you know, then God has to work some kind of a miracle, super miracle for us. But the miracle happened on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock a few years ago on Golgotha. And we should remember that. There's another deadly title by R.B. Langer, The Politics of Experience. He has a group of institutes for hopeless children, whom society calls the insane. Those who don't or won't adjust to our society, and children whom we label perhaps mentally sick or emotionally disturbed. And either he or a group he was studying treated them as if they were healthy, beautiful children, wonderfully different, not sick, and incredible things happened. They were wonderful, beautiful children, much different. Who are the sick? Those who can't or won't adjust to society, or a society that demands that we adjust to it. Recently in the Spokesman Review for Spokane, Washington, there's a whole series on, we're fighting the battle of pornography all over again in downtown Spokane. And there were some really neat examples of people trying to rationalize why they should sell it. And one man says, well, after all, people want to buy it. Someone has to sell it, and so I am. It's all right to sell it. People want to buy it. And I got to thinking, I wonder what he would say if I told him, gee, I know an unemployed hitman from Chicago. It's bad to be unemployed. So I'm going to hire him and give him your name. After all, he needs a job. I thought about it, but I didn't. R.B. Langer concluded that children whose potential is withheld withdraw within themselves for survival. And you know, we often do that too. We think much less than we know. We know much less than we love. We love much less than there is. And therefore we are much less than we really are. Because our society too much says, look, I don't have time for you. It's like being up here at Holden. It's so easy to be Christian in Holden. It's so easy. I mean, you just can't help it. Being un-Christian, you'd really have to work at it. And then people would look at you and they say, well, you know, they need a little loving. So they'd come over and hug you and love you. And pretty soon they convince you. But when we go back in the world we know, it's awfully hard to be Christian in an unloving world. Because our world keeps saying, I don't have time for you. The only thing that you have is you. And you and I are beautiful inside and we're beautiful outside. And that's something that Jesus saw in every human being he met. Whether it was a prostitute, a tax collector, the woman caught in the act of adultery, whoever they were, he saw the beauty of them. There's only one of you in the whole world. Secondly, a loving individual frees himself or herself from labels. Just think, some examples. I like to use TV commercials, and recently, in the last 3 or 4 months, I've had a concentrated effort among myself to quit watching Kojak and a few of the others, my favorite programs. It's not just that Bald is beautiful, but he comes on at the right time when I need some violence to get it out of my system. But think of the labels we use. Wasp. Honky. We're all honkies in this room. Dago, WAP, Spick, Nigger, Christian, Norsk, Pentecostal, Lutheran, all kinds of labels. Look at that, look what society is telling us, what they're advertising. I'm just waiting for the first, I would even like to see it come back on TV, a cigarette commercial with a fellow who's about 60 years old, who has a tummy that sticks out so far that he couldn't find his belt buckle for a week, bare-chested, smoking a cigarette, and says, "I smoke because I like to." But what do you see? You see this fellow who's there. He looks like he just finished the marathon in the Olympics. "I smoke for the taste," you know, on the back of all the magazine ads. Or we had Walt Garrison came to the Pullman Washington State University rodeo recently. And after Walt Garrison left, all the junior high kids in town were chewing snus and spitting it all everywhere on the street. One high school brother cured his junior high little brother from chewing snus, but he grabbed his mouth and held it till he swallowed it. Or just think the other things which TV tells us. You remember the certs ad? Click, click. If he kissed you once, will he kiss you again? What's the click, click ad really telling a young girl? They're preying on their fears. A lot of the TV ads prey on your fears. Click, click. Are you ever going to get kissed again the rest of your life? Well, we were going up to the Heart Lake yesterday, and I got up there, and everyone was drinking water out of the creek, and I looked out there, and I said, "You know what I'd really like to get up there is a cold beer." And I just see it now. We were right in the trees. I said, "There's a whole group of loggers, and they swing out from the tree, and they're singing their song, you know, like the guys in the sailboat and so forth. You always see them, and they're always vigorous and youthful. I just want to see a group of people who feel like me, you know, sort of plodding along." That's an honest advertising. You still don't see the honest advertising. Now give all the gusto you've got, because you only go around once in life. Well, are you Christian? Well, I've been baptized. That was enough proof for Luther. You know what a Christian is? A Christian's a follower of Jesus. And some of us are followers. All of us are followers. But there's prevalent theologies today which sort of come in upon us as Lutherans and say, "Listen, there's only one way to follow Jesus, and that's our way. You don't sound like us. You're different than us." You can't be really Christian. And then you'll spill out the theology, and you're not like that. And the end result is, well, I'll pray for you. Or you'll be handed a little booklet that was handed my daughter and said, "On Becoming a Christian." Really hurt her feelings, because she had come to the revelation that she had never known a moment in her life when she hadn't been Christian. What's wrong with that? Maybe as a parent, I should have denied her the opportunity to go to church. I should have said, "Well, dear, Jesus loves the prostitute better. You're 16. Become a prostitute so you can get saved." Practically everything that seems to come on our college campus as an evangelistic kind of theology nowadays comes on with that kind of thing. It's, I won't use all the terminology we use, but sports figures for Jesus, pretty girls for Jesus. There's all kinds of religious groups on the campus for the pretty people. You've got to be very athletic if you're a male, or very beautiful if you're feminine. But for the rest of us, there ain't very much except people like me in Lutheran campus ministry. We label people. I label people, and that's dangerous because Jesus didn't. Thirdly, a loving individual abhors waste, especially a human being waste. How many hours is it that our children are going to watch TV before they reach the ripe old age of five? Is it 5,000 hours, something like that? There's some horrendous amount of hours. Before grade one, where are values taught? The most violent programs of all are those things which we parents have let our children watch on Saturday morning. We call them the cartoons. And then we're very upset when we go through the supermarket as papas and mamas, and the kids stop by and all of a sudden they see sugar, cinnamon, corn floops, and I've just got to buy it because I've heard that commercial 1,800 times. And we say no, and we're mad at them. Can't you see it now? You hold that beautiful young woman in your arms, you males, and you run your hand down and you look at, you say, oh, look at that. And she says, yes, I have washed my hands in Caress. Or he's just about to kiss you. And he says, darling. And she said, yes, dear, you need the signal. Or my hairspray holds for 14 hours. That's because it's got more lacquer in it than anything else. Why don't you just dump a bucket of lacquer in it? It'll probably hold for 14 years. Well, these things we write to people. Dear Emily Post, what sort of flowers should a bride carry at her wedding? My daughter wants to carry radishes. Let her carry radishes. She likes radishes. Or Emily Post says, ladies shouldn't laugh. They should titter demurely. Whatever that means. These in the last couple of years I've been pulling some of these out. Society says men don't cry, especially masculine, hairy-chested men. They die with ulcers by the time they're 52. That's not the only cause of ulcers, having hairy chest. Think of all the downers that we have through advertising that plays upon our fears. Different kinds of fears during our life. When we're youth, will I ever get kissed? When we're a little older, you're about to kiss them, my God, do I have bad breath? Or you're a parent and you're holding a little child and you're wondering, wow, if I died, what would happen to my family? I guess I really do need $750,000 insurance. Or at least a good-sized piece of the rock. By the way, I've got a piece of the rock. Can you imagine asking 1,000 women in right downtown in your town? You stop 1,000 of them and you ask them, what is the greatest fear that you have in life? And they said, ring around the collar. Am I a successful wife? Does my husband have ring around the collar? Just fear after fear after fear. And we buy and we buy and we buy because we're afraid. We aren't enough ourselves. So there's a woman walking across here with her husband, and they're 50 years old and they're arm in arm and they look like they're honeymooners and they're celebrating their 25th wedding anniversary and they just went home yesterday. And there's stars in their eyes. I don't care if he's got ring around the collar, bad breath, and he's got purple toenails coming out the end of his toes, or shoes. Man, they're in love. they've rediscovered themselves as human beings. And they're expressing it. It's not that they found it at Holden, but Holden helped them remember and rediscover. And they decided, when we go home, we shall not forget. Well, Holden does that for the rest of us too. Helps us not forget to be loving people. So when all these things come along and says, oh, you should be afraid, and whatever you're going to do, and by, you can look at them. Well, I'm going to be gross now. Pinch your nose and go to the TV set. You should. Or shut it off. Better yet, pick up a good book. If you don't feel very good about yourself, you fall for the kind of junk that people want to sell you. When you feel very good about yourself, it is a super life. Though you and I don't feel good always. Sometimes we're up, sometimes we're down. When I get down, the people whom I have loved know it. And they will not allow me to stay down very long if I will let them love me. And when I'm up, I've got everything to give. And I give it away. Most of you know Don Quixote. Perhaps some of you saw the movie or the play, The Man from La Mancha. And we all know that Don Quixote was this nut that got on his old scarecrow horse and tilted windmills. Everybody knows Don Quixote is a nut, a fool. You know, he'd probably been locked up, butterfly net, the whole thing if he lived nowadays. Foolish old man in an armor suit fighting windmills. But who's foolish? Don Quixote was doing exactly what he liked to do. He loved to tilt windmills. And everybody who watched him shook their head with the bitterness on their face of life and walked on by him saying, the old fool. That's like when I went through Denver, Colorado for a convention once and stopped by to visit friends. And we're in this beautiful palatial end of area of town on the way to their house. They live not in the palatial end of town. But driving along these manicured areas where someone got, I'm sure, with snips and snipped the lawn in the right corner. Right in the middle of this house with a big circular lawn in front. Just gorgeous flowers over the whole lawn. Beautiful yellow flowers. All the neighbors were out there going, digging their dandelions out and looking at that beautiful yellow flower bed, hating them. So one person thought were beautiful flowers, the other person thought was a nuisance. Well, Don Quixote, you know, charged windmills. And he would charge him, hit the windmill, and they'd come around and knock him off his horse onto his whoopee-doopee, and that was it. His whole life. But in the death scene, there he is, all laid out. And there's a giant staircase that sort of moves out in the back, and the light comes down. And nobody else sees this, but Don Quixote picks up his lance, and he starts walking up the staircase. And the music breaks out then to I Dream the Impossible Dream. Nobody else could see the staircase or heard the music but Don Quixote. Who was nuts? Perhaps Don Quixote was, but he sure enjoyed it. You know, all of us are a little fruity. We have our ways. And so whatever your fruitiness is, enjoy it. And if other people are upset, my, they have a terrible problem, don't they? You know, life is really a present wonder. We sort of open our eyes when we're around here because, you know, in Pullman, Washington, we don't have those peaks. Rolling hills, yes. Those of you from the Dakotas don't even see a bump in the landscape, I understand, in some areas. But we open our eyes to all the wonder of creation, of the rhythm of God's world, what's inside and what's outside, and we can dance. You know, the joy of yesterday is gone, but it's given us and makes us what we are today. And tomorrow, that's
what it's all about. Tomorrow. What are you going to do tomorrow? Oh, I'm going to get in the jacuzzi if someone doesn't put soap in it. Or wash their hair. Or put on suntan lotion and climb in. And all the water gets drained out. So I'm going to take a sauna. We almost burned that down a while back, too. The one behind the dining hall. I'm going to take a hike. I'm going to enjoy all this beautiful scenery. Wow! But if I don't look into your eyes and see you as human beings and know you for your wonder, I missed it. Fourthly, a loving person sees the continuous wonder of life. Because we've forgotten to look at the beauty of the world around us. You want to paint? Paint what's around you. When you're here, paint mountains. When you're at home, paint alleys. Paint flowers. Paint people. You want to paint? Paint what's around you. When you're here, paint mountains. When you're at home, paint alleys. Paint flowers. Paint people. You know, the Indian artists have really got something to tell us. If you go into an Indian art gallery in New Mexico, and I lived there for too many years to remember almost, you rarely ever see a painting of a young person. There's no character. And I thought, I've got to be old to have character. But that's what the Indian is saying. You see an old, gnarled face. And those are the paintings that they treasure. And you know who paints them? Young people. People not even 20 years old. They do the paintings. Wow. But they also paint youth as well. Some of us wonder if there is life after you. Yes and no. Some people die when they're 15. They may breathe for 70 years more, but they're really dead. And some people are more alive when they're 95 than many people are when they're 15. It all depends. You and I worry a lot about tomorrow. What's life going to be like on this planet in 1984? Will there be enough energy to go around? What's going to happen? Or on the other hand, we do an opposite kind of worry. We look back and we say, oh, why didn't I just buy that piece of land where they have 15 dozen oil wells now? I could have. We worry about the future, or we lament the past, and we miss today. I asked you what you're going to do tomorrow. What are you going to do today? There's so many books that tell us about the goals of life. Or every time I go to a graduation ceremony, and I went to so many this past June, high school, two universities, and one college graduation, I am up to here in the goals of life. It's the same stuff shoveled with different size shovels. The goals of life. I wanted to say, you know, the goal of your life isn't important. the trip is.
And no one said a word about the trip or even where the bus stopped.
Have you been around behind the dining hall, between the dining hall and the sauna, and seen the bus stop? That tells it all there. There's no buses come by. That's the place to sit down and talk to people.
You know, children are always asking crazy questions. And I use this as an illustration because this really happened a few days ago in Intimacy. But at a church where I was filling in because they didn't have a pastor and they were a little in delay in calling one, and so they asked me a few times to be the preacher. And the former pastor always wore only the black cassock and not even the white surplice, so the children only saw the pastor in black. And I came bouncing in my white karate cape. And the little children, since I give children sermons and they'd never heard any of those before, were a little bit taken by this. And I didn't seem to bite, and so they came forward more often than usual. And after church, one day, a little boy came up and he sort of grabbed me and he wrapped his arms around my leg about here, thigh high. And he looked up and he says, "Pastor, what do you want to be when you grow up?" Oh, well, you know, when you're 40-ish, and someone says, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" That's a bad question. If I was 20, it would be a very bad question, but now that I'm in my 40s, I think that's a terrific question. What do I want to be when I grow up? I want to be an old man when I grow up. A very old man with character in my faith. You know, too many people reach 50 and discover they've never really lived. They don't like themselves. They don't like what they've done. They don't like where they are. They don't like what they've been. They don't like the people around them. They don't like anything. Life has been a bummer. "Pastor, what do you want to be when you grow up?" What a phenomenal question. Well, I told him, "When I grow up, I want to be a fireman. Because I've always wanted to get on the side of a red fire truck and go down the street. I'm just waiting sometime when I get famous or infamous. But the mayor will give me the key to the city because I want to see if it's going to fit in the ignition of the fire truck." And I'm very upset now that they have white fire trucks. But Pullman has red ones, except for the Volunteer Fire Department, which is right across from my, I don't know why we bought that house, but it's right across the street from the Volunteer Fire Department. They have white ones. "When I grow up, I want to be human. Dumb, probably, but human. There's so much of myself that is dehumanizing, and I've only recently discovered it. When I've been able to get rid of those dehumanizing things within myself, I've started really living and enjoying life and really loving. I've fallen in love with my wife like I've never fallen in love before. I love my kids. It's fantastic. I enjoy them. They're not a threat. They're different. They embarrass the hell out of me, but they embarrass me every once in a while. But they're them." Of course, I've never embarrassed them. What's important in life is the trip, the step-by-step process. We step each day. We're going to have something just as wonderful these next few hours here at Holden Village, of having people share with us their lives. It may not be in a spoken message by intellectual types or something. There's one man up here, and probably you even haven't discovered him yet, who has the most fantastic hug. It's fantastic. He probably doesn't even think he has anything to give. It's Andy the plumber. He meets you and he says, "I'm the plumber, I'm Andy, and if you need me, you just holler and I'll come running."
And we were up here for a high school retreat in May, and a girl came out the top of Lodge 4, and she says, "Andy!" There's nobody down there but people. Pretty soon, Andy pops out from somewhere, and he runs up there, and he's got his plumber's helper and everything else, because Andy knows what she's calling about. And he came into Lodge 4, and she knew exactly what... How did she know who to call, haul her to? That's Andy. And he's got a fantastic hug. If you want to know who Andy is, he has a pair of coveralls right on right now, and he's got these psychedelic pockets. Don't miss it. The faces of the people up here, their eyes, the tenderness, the amount they care, the people who give these devotions in the morning and come out of a soapy kitchen, wipe off their hands, take off their apron, do that fantastic devotion, go back in, put the apron back on, and back in the hot water again. You think, wow, who are they? Are they some female theologian from Luther Seminary or New York? No, she's probably from some little town in Iowa. And the first time she's ever done it in her whole life, but wasn't it super? It's been like that all week long. It's fantastic. Day after day, they keep popping out of the woodwork. Woo. So don't miss the faces of your own family and your own friends. They may not be much, but that's all they are. Don't miss it. Don't miss touching and crying and holding and hugging and snoring.
Andy's outside.
Yeah. You heard his name.
He did. You know what he's doing? He's watching the people who always have to go up here and water their plants outside. So he's trying to figure out how he can put water underneath. So all they got to do is turn the handle and watch the water go and enjoy it. That's what he's doing. Don't miss saying, "I love you." Because he missed the chance. It might not come again. Live now. There's a couple of poems I'd like to read, interspersing the next few minutes. The title of this one is "But You Didn't." It's from a young woman, 1970. "You loaned me your car and I dented the fender. You could have scolded me, but you didn't. You invited me to your party and I came in my old blue jeans. You could have gotten really mad at me, but you didn't. You took me to the beach and we built sandcastles and ran the surf. And later you wanted to kiss me and I teased and said, 'Later, later,' and you didn't. I thought we'd have plenty of time when you came home from Vietnam, and you didn't." Anonymous. Anonymous has written some beautiful stuff. I'd like to meet them someday. Anonymous is probably people like you and me who have one poem in our whole life to give, whoever wrote it down. A loving person, lastly, understands the needs of other people, because they need the same things themselves. What do I need? Same things you need. What do you need? The same things I need. Leo Biscaglia is a USC psych prof. That's a place that has the football teams. They also have a university, and they teach classes there. He talks about a group of teachers who had thrown out the Harvard standardized IQ test that had originally been done in 1918. And updated each year. And we all know that anything that comes out of Harvard must be good. They threw it out. They chose instead 5 students at random, and they decided that rather than go by the IQs, they would experiment, and they would choose these 5 for extra special attention at random to see if that would spur on their education, that extra personal education. And one teacher, unfortunately, drew the name of a little boy by the name of George. She had 4 real goodies, all girls, and George. George was the real loser. But she spent her time with those 5 to see if they would spurt in their education. And at the end of the semester, the 4 and George spurted. George spurted most of all. Another teacher divided his high school class into 3 sections for 6 weeks, and he graded their papers differently.
In the first, he only put a grade, A, B, C, D, F. The second group, he put the grade and a word, perhaps like good, nice, lousy, stinky. The first group didn't change at all. The second group didn't change very much. With the third group, he wrote a whole letter on it. A letter of kind of encouragement. You got a fantastic idea. I was really thrilled by your story. And so on and so on and so on. And you know, I found out that if you just did this and this and put a period at the end, it was even better because I knew when the sentence stopped and you put a capital, the next one started. It was fantastic when I did that. See? You made 18 wrong. You made 32 right. You're a parent. You're a teenager. Now, in my own class that I teach at the University of Idaho, I found out that I wrote big letters at the midterm exams because I had lots of time. And I was very troubled at the end of the semester because I didn't have time to write big letters. On each one I said, sorry, I couldn't write as much as I did on the midterm exam. Love, Roger, and gave them their grade. Because I couldn't. I had run out of time. But each one of those persons knows that I had read that exam at least four times. I told them I would, and I did. I should have said three times, and I could have written my letters. But I said four times, and I did it. I had a parent stop by and give me a big hug. And he said, you know, my son, who's a graduate in civil engineering with a straight A average, said this was the most significant class he's had at the university. Biblical History and Thought, 104. Wild. So a loving person understands the needs of others, and we need to touch each need. And some people, when you reach out to touch them, jump back. Don't touch me. I'm frightened of you. And so I tell people, you know, when you're walking across the campus and you're a male and you see a beautiful girl walking across there, and you run up to her and you say, you're beautiful, and you grab her and hug her, she'll probably holler rape. But I sat into a rape crisis clinic for young women, and it said, there's a danger on the campus of you being raped. So whatever you do when you walk across the campus and a man smiles at you, don't pay any attention as if you even saw him. He might be a rapist. And I was sitting in the back. Oh, I better not even say this. I hate to cuss in front of people. But I did. I said, that's a bunch of bull. You fill in the word. Anyone you want. And I said, I may be a dirty old man, but I'm not a rapist. And when I walk across the campus and I smile at a person, it's because I like them or I feel good. And if you walk straight ahead with your eyes like that, you've got a problem. I don't. And if you want to walk through your life like that, go right ahead. I said, and when you end up bitter, you chose it, not me. And I got up and I stomped out and I slammed the door. Oh well, I never did find out what happened after that. But Emily Post says, a lady should only extend her hand, let the gentleman grasp it lightly and shake it very gently. So if you want your hand extended and shake very lightly, I'll honor that. But if you want to be hugged, you open your arms and I'll hug you. But we all have to be aware, because some people have arthritis in their hands and you give them a good bone-crunching handshake and they want to scream, but they can't because they've got their teeth clenched together. So watch out. And some people don't like to be hugged. And there are times when I can't be hugged because I don't want to be. I'm just like this, don't hug me. I can't. I just can't. But you'll know.
if you want to have some fun sometime, and you really feel ornery, you know, I get those days and I feel ornery. You walk into an elevator, you know, you walk in the elevator, everybody gets in, they turn around, and you stand there after you push your button, you go like this. Just watch the numbers go by. Everybody walks out. There's not even a graffiti on the back of the door. Nothing to say, you know, the day is yucky, smile about it, or anything. You watch the lights, and you get off. Want to have some fun sometimes, get on the elevator, and when you get on, don't turn around, just look at people. Especially if it's crowded, and you've got packages, because within two floors, the whole elevator will be emptied, and you'll have it all to yourself. People don't know how to do that. You get on the elevator and they go like this. They're all standing there. Nobody is touching each other. It holds capacity 15 people. There's 25 on it. Do it sometime just for fun, if you want to. Or you walk on the elevator and everybody's standing there and you say, gee, wouldn't it be neat if it got stuck? We could really get acquainted. One floor, they'll all be off. We really need to look at each other sometimes, sometimes to touch, to be a little bit different. I was really upset coming up here because I was going to miss the play by Philip Wilder, Our Town. I've been wanting to see Our Town for years, and it was going to be at WSU, and I bought the tickets. And then Holden Village said, can you come? I looked at the tickets and looked at the date, and I said, I want it some other day, but my family saw it. Because I want to see what little Emily was going to be like. Little Emily, you know, in the play Our Town, she's dead. And she's allowed to come back for one day. And so she, what day do you want to go, Emily? And she says, I choose my 12th birthday. And that was my happiest day of my whole life. And everybody else says, don't go, Emily. Don't go. Don't do it. But Emily decides to go back. And it's her 12th birthday. And she relives it. And she's coming down the stairs, and she says, good morning, Mom, or good morning, Mama. I'm your birthday girl. And Mommy's too busy working at the sink, getting ready for breakfast, you know, and getting ready for the cake for the birthday, to turn more around and saying, hi, Emily. Have your breakfast. Come on, sit down at the table and have you washed up, kind of stuff, you know. And then there's Daddy, and he's there, and she says, good morning, Daddy. Here am I, your birthday girl. And Daddy's been reading the paper, and, you know, Daddy's just right in the middle of an interesting article, and he sort of looks down at, hi, Emily, kind of thing, you know. And then her brother comes down, and she says, good morning, brother. But you know how brothers are and sisters are anyway. And she's waiting for someone saying, she says, look at me. I'm 12 today. It's my birthday. I'm your birthday girl. And she turns, and she looks at the audience, and she says, my God, I forgot how lonely it is being human. You know, at our youth congress in Portland last year, or the year before last, all sorts of small groups, like, you pick one, 40 or 50 going on the same time. You know what the highest attendance was? Not John Ilvesacker playing his guitar. Not some of these super people talking about love and creation and all sorts of things. The biggest one of all was on loneliness. The highest suicide rate among any people in the country is between 10 and 25 years old. Not people my age or your age. Between 10 and 25. Loneliness. Look at me. I'm your birthday girl. I came out of the Compton Union Building. They call it Student Union Building in some areas. Gee, I gotta be quick. At Washington State University. And something must have been magic, because I was walking out the door and this beautiful young woman, a dirty old man like me, really appreciates beauty. And she came toward me and she said, hi. And I looked around to see who she was looking at, and it was me. I was the only one there. And I looked at her and I said, hi. And I walked on the next person, and it was a guy walking toward me. He was about 10 yards away. And before I got there, he said, hi. And I said, hi. And another fellow coming on, he was walking down looking at his ankles, or sort of walking by, and he got close, and I decided, boy, he's not going to get by. And I said, hi. He looked up, and I go to church with him. I didn't recognize his ankles as they were going by, but I recognized that face. And he said, hi. And then I got to thinking, oh man, I must have been smiling the whole way, because I was. And then I got thinking about that. Wow. And I suddenly realized, as I was putting my hand on the door of Koinonia House, that all the rest of the way back, nobody else said hi. I probably quit smiling and got thinking about something else. And what I was thinking about was a story about a young man in San Francisco who had left a note in his hotel, and he said, I'm on my way to the Golden Gate Bridge, and in those 2 miles, if anyone will smile at me or say hello, I won't throw myself off. And the police found that suicide note. That's what I was thinking of. My God, 16,000 young people on this campus. I wonder if someone here is thinking this day, if someone would smile at me, I won't do it. And so me walked back, all the way back to Koinonia House door, grabbed hold of the door handle and said, the good that I would, I do not. The evil that I would not, I do. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this sin? I think this fellow's name said that was Paul. Most of us, you know, never mature. We only grow older and bigger. And so the purpose in life is to matter, to count, to amount to something, to make something of ourselves. A wizard of intellectual capacity. I'll never be a wizard, neither will you. A fantastic name that everyone will know. It'll be in lights. Kill a president and get in lights. Write a poem that really pours out of your heart. No one will ever read it, perhaps. And then maybe someone will find it and bring it to Holden Village, and they'll say anonymous. Last closing story. The City Lights bookstore in San Francisco has a collection of poems by nobodies, stories by nobodies. They're mimeographed. You can pay $5 and have your book mimeographed. And maybe someday someone will buy it, and there's a little card in the back of the book that they can write to you and tell you what they thought about it. City Lights bookstore is not the place anyone ever go to, because it's in that part of town where everybody, it used to be the years ago, the beatniks, and then the flower children, and then the hippies, and whatever we've got group lives there. I am neither a sacrilege nor a privilege. I may not be competent or excellent, but I am present. My happiness is me, not you. Not only because you may be temporary, but also because you want me to be what I am not. I cannot be happy when I change merely to satisfy you. I cannot feel content to be criticized for not thinking your thoughts or for not seeing like you. When you reject my beliefs, you reject me. You said that I was transparent and easily forgotten, but why did you try to use my lifetime to prove to yourself who you are? Michelle, 20, 1967, on the fog-swept beach, to leave us, to continue on your way. Printed by friends in 1969. We love you, we need you, we will remember. To be yourself in a world, because I knew Michelle, I'm sorry, I was trying to make you. I'm sorry. To be yourself in a world where everybody is trying to make you what they want you to be will always be your greatest battle. It's your survival.